If you love to travel, Capital One has a rewards credit card that's perfect for you. With the Capital One Venture X card, you earn unlimited double miles on everything you buy. Plus, you get premium benefits at a collection of luxury hotels when you book on Capital One Travel. And with Venture X, you get access to over 1,000 airport lounges worldwide. Open up a world of travel possibilities with the Capital One Venture X card. What's in your wallet?
Terms apply. Lounge access is subject to change. See CapitalOne.com for details.
Welcome back to the Bonfire Podcast, where we talk about the UFC and mixed martial arts with those closest to the fight game. I am your host, longtime MMA journalist and MMA junkie, senior reporter Mike Bon, and we got a big show coming up today ahead of UFC 312 this weekend, the first pay-per-view of February, the second pay-per-view of the year. It is going to be an interesting one, at least from the main event perspective. Continues this massive month for the middleweight division in February. Of course, that kicked off this past weekend at UFC Saudi Arabia. The headliner of that card sees Israel Adesanya drop a third consecutive combat sports bout for the first time in his illustrious career when he is knocked out in the second round by Nasruddin Imavov, who really broke through as a new name and new contender to watch at 185 pounds. I know a lot of the focus going off Izzy and what's next for him and what the future holds on this losing skid now that is unprecedented for his career, but definitely got to give props to Imavov for taking advantage of the moment and getting that breakthrough signature win he needed on his resume and put himself in a great position of talk and attention and all that stuff going into the championship fight and rematch on Saturday between Dricus du Plessis and Sean Strickland. Of course, in the co-main event of UFC Saudi Arabia, Michael Page moved up to the middleweight division for the first time in the UFC and handed Shara Magomedov, Shara Bullitt, his first career loss in a pretty one-sided and clear decision for that. I thought MVP looked solid at middleweight. My preference would be him sticking around in that weight class. I know he has different feelings, but if you want kind of my immediate aftermath thoughts from UFC Saudi Arabia, plenty of that over on MMA Junkie with my matchmaker videos and takeaways column. So definitely make sure to check that out if you haven't already. But as I said, it ducktails perfectly into Saturday, where Strickland and du Plessis will run back a rematch of the title fight that happened at UFC 297 just down the street right here where I'm recording in Toronto. And du Plessis won the title that night by split decision, a very close fight. Both guys feel that they deserve to get their hand raised there. Sean Strickland being very bothered by the decision that night, but here we are. They each won one fight since then. Adesanya lost to du Plessis in du Plessis' first title defense, and then Strickland beat Paulo Costa to earn another shot at gold here. So it's going to be very interesting to see how that unfolds over there in Sydney, Australia. Of course, in the co-headliner there, you got Zhang Weili and Tatiana Suarez fighting for the strawweight belt. Outside of that, not a whole lot to speak of on UFC 312, a pretty weak card in terms of ranked fighters, but those two title fights are quite solid, in my opinion, enough to carry this over the edge and make it a watchable event. But in terms of the undercard, not a whole lot to speak on. But as we will kind of dissect through everything that is going on in the middleweight division with UFC 312, one of my favorite minds in the sport, Coach Saif Saud of Fortis MMA, going to join the podcast for the first time. You probably know him, of course, from his many coaching appearances and wins in the UFC with Fortis MMA fighters. Also spent a lot of time doing the UFC breakdown shows over on YouTube, and just has so much good knowledge and insight when it comes to these fighters, these fights. And I thought no one better to break down, which I think is a pretty difficult to predict title rematch between du Plessis and Strickland. And we'll see how that kind of fits in the middleweight division overall, considering we have some other big time fights coming up. February 15th, main event at the Apex, Jared Cannonier, Gregory Rodriguez in Seattle the week after, a rematch between Brendan Allen and Anthony Hernandez, and then a recently announced main event in March between Marvin Vittori and Roman Dolidze, another rematch there. So there's going to be a lot of movement and all that kind of stuff going on at middleweight over this month. No better time to kind of give an insight on it. Did a little bit of that last week with John Gooden, but I think Saif Saud, a perfect person to break down this title fight. So we are going to take a quick break. Pete, please make sure to like, subscribe, follow, comment, anything you can do to show support to the show. While you do that, we will take a quick break and be right back with Safe Seven. We are back here on the bonfire with a first-time guest of the show, but a very familiar face in my personal life and in the MMA scene. It is Coach Safe Saud, fresh off a plane from Saudi Arabia, man. How are we feeling? You exhausted?
Yeah, I'm tired, but I'm here. You know, this is the job, so.
No, appreciate you making the time. I guess it was a bit of a fruitless trip over there, right? You went to corner.
Yeah, I went to corner Abdul. But we went to Mecca and we did so much stuff together as a group. It was like such a special time. And it ended up being really a good trip. And, you know, for us to be together and be over there and not have a fight and bond like that, it was cool. So it ended up being cool. You know, you've got to make the best out of this game. And you've been in around it a long time. Like, it's so volatile. Things are changing all the time, but you've got to really try to harvest the best parts of it. And, you know, the whole thing about this is that we all love each other. You know, we're teammates, coaches. It's just this crazy ride that we're all on. So, and we're traveling all over the world, you know, having all these experiences. So you just got to try to maintain a positive outlook.
Yeah, and for anyone unfamiliar, you're supposed to corner Abdul Karim Al-Sawadi over there. When did you find out exactly that his fight was off?
Man, he had Jordan Levitt was supposed to be his opponent, and then he had another guy, and that guy's super tough, and we were training, getting ready, and the guy ended up getting sick, like, I think Friday or Saturday last week, and then it was like, we didn't get it until maybe Monday. The timing was just what it was, but, you know, Abdul had a good camp and he'll be back and we'll go from there.
Yeah. Man, what a bummer. So, like, were you on the plane when you basically figured out, or do you still go there, like, hoping that maybe you'd find your place or something?
Yeah, it was more towards the latter, but, and it's also showing your guy, like, I'm fucking here for you, bro. Like, mm-hmm. I'm going to get on the plane and I'm going to fly. I was actually really, really sick when he made his UFC debut and I wasn't there, and that's bothered me so much. Because he was winning that fight and he was really close and he ended up getting caught. And I was like, man, I wasn't there for him. So no matter what, I was going to be there for him. And even though he didn't even fight, I was still there for him. And I'm glad, you know, that kid's been with me 10 years, man. More than that. I love my guys. They're like my kids, you know, and, I don't have any sons, but one of them told me you got 30 sons, you got 40 sons. What are you talking about? So, you know, you never know how much longer you're going to be doing this and you just got to try to enjoy all of it, you know?
Yeah. Did they, I know, like, he was probably on this card for good reason, you know, location, all that stuff. Did they give any hints when they might want him back?
I mean, maybe we'll just do Jordan Levitt again. If Jordan's down, Jordan's a tough guy. You know, I think that's a pretty hard test. Mm-hmm. He's been around for a while, you know, and he's not an easy fight. So I don't know. I mean, we prepared for him already, so we'll see.
Yeah, for sure. And I mean, while you were over there, obviously got to experience the card still a little bit, which was significant, especially the top results. Kind of leaned into this month of middleweight where a lot is going on this weekend. We have the title fight, but let's stick with what happened over there a little bit. What did you think of what happened in the main event between Nassir Dinimov and Israel Adesanya?
I mean, I think it amazes me that people get surprised, you know, towards the end of these guys' careers. It just goes to show you how incredibly great the level was and how they sustained it. And any champion that sustains a title run and at this level right now with MMA the way it is, it's incredible. And what's going to happen is, as MMA continues to evolve, champions won't have the belt very long. I mean, you'll have guys that have it one fight, two fights. Mm-hmm. It's going to happen a lot. And the thing that makes the UFC so exciting is they don't give a shit. They throw anybody in there. Like, they'll throw stars against up and comers. You know, it's like no one really knows who he is, Nassir Dean, and not really, not over here. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I mean, he caught him. He caught him a stance switch. Izzy was in the A zone and kind of switched back, and he got caught. But the thing is, like, I look at that fight and just think about how incredible Izzy has been and what he's done. And it's like I see everybody else. They're like sad, you know, and everybody's. It's kind of like mourning, like, oh man, this great fighter. But it's like, this happens to every single fighter after a certain point, because they're fighting at the very elite level. Like, the thing about these champions is once they get to that level, like, you know, it's the same thing with Brandon. Everybody you fight is on the way up and is the very best of the new breed or the new or whatever, you know. Mm-hmm. Nassir Dean is a good example of that. You know, he's 5 or 6, 7 years younger than Izzy, in his prime, hungry, you know. So it's constantly like being at the very tip of the spear against the most amount of danger. And how long can you do that for, man? You know, I mean, at 35 years old, if you're just a step, just a hair slower, just a hair, just like Roy Jones, you know, the guy was all reflexes. He would hit people, come back, and they couldn't even touch him. He got just a little bit slower, and that was the difference. So I think that's what we're seeing with Izzy. I still think he looked really, really good in the fight. I think he can beat tons of people. I think he could beat Nasruddin, you know, in a fight. But with the style that he has and the way that he strikes, you know, and that division and the young guys coming up, I mean, you're seeing, you know, the top five with Robert Whittaker and Izzy and these guys that have been there forever. And again, instead of looking at that as like a fall for grace, I just look at it, I'm like, wow, how badass are these guys that they've been here this long? Like, these are guys that have been here 7, 8 years. Robert Whittaker, I mean, they've been in the top five and top 10 for so long. Man, it's not easy. So we see a big shift coming in the middleweight division, and that was an example.
I mean, to your point about, champions struggling to reign as long as they maybe once did, that's definitely very on point. That's why guys like Anderson Silva and Demetrius Johnson,
Amazing.
all of them were so special. And, even Izzy to get to five title defenses
Oh,
is
incredible.
very, very difficult. So, yeah, I think kind of the way you described that and broke it down was pretty on point. But I guess, it's one thing to lose to Sean Strickland and Dricus, who, of course, are fighting for the title next weekend. It was a lot of made with like Nasruddin, his first non-title fight in 6 years, like all that
Yeah,
stuff.
but that doesn't matter though. I mean, Nasruddin could knock out one of those guys too,
Could
you
be the
know,
next champion.
and Strickland could beat him up too, maybe, you know, and on and on and on. Like it, at that level, man, at that level, you're talking about, look, everybody's a badass and everybody is tough. Everybody's passed all the tests of toughness, mental toughness, training. Like, you don't get to that level, be a champion and circle the wagons there without really being dedicated. And so, like, all those guys are dangerous. And you know what the guys I'm looking at are the guys that are coming up, you know, like the guys that are, you know, like Roman, you know, and even Fluffy. I mean, that dude puts a pace on people. I love watching that guy fight.
Yeah, me too.
I think he's a badass. I love his style because, you know, he grapples a lot, but he just gets in people's face. And in the apex, I mean, he's just right in their face the whole time. So, man, some of these guys are coming up and they're hungry, and you can't doubt any of these guys. You know, you don't know what those guys at 10 and 11 and 9 are going to do. Obviously, you have Khamzat Chimaev up there, you know, who had an exceptional performance against Robert Whittaker. But again, it's just at the top, it's so hard. And it's more for me just celebrating these guys, like how long they've been there. And the other thing is, man, they're making the most money they've ever made. You know, that's the way that it works, right? They're at the peak there. So, and I hear people saying, well, you know, well, like, they should make more, but that's just not how the business works. Like, you got to keep winning to make more money, because once a fighter loses, he kind of loses his value, you know? So it can't be a system like that. We all wish it was, and coaches, all of us, we all wish it was. We all wish it, you know, they got guarantees and contracts that were bigger. But when you look at the system of fighting, you could have a guy that you think's unbelievable, and then he goes and just gets fraud checked by someone else, and then he never recovers. So you sell this, be like the NHL, give this guy a $100 million goalie contract, and you got to pay him the whole time. So the MMA, the way they built it, how they came up from nothing, and how they've built it up, it's become where guys are still at the top and they're still fighting because they're still earning, and then they have that dilemma: should I still keep going? Should I stop? You know, again, the truth is always somewhere in the middle. It's not anybody's fault. It's just kind of the way it's happened. And that also goes down to personal preference on those guys. You look at Khabib, you look at GSP. I mean, you knew that they made it a point to step out on top. And, you know, people clown them for that, but I think that and now in hindsight won't be clowned on as much. Dude, fighting is hard. You know, I did it. It takes a lot of mental energy to really want to get into that cage, man. You got to be mentally ready. And the thing is, these guys have been so great for so long. They're like, I can get one more in, you know? And they show it too. I mean, you look good in the first. But that's just MMA. It's just the nature of what MMA is. It hurts to watch, but it's like you can't take it personal. These are all personal decisions that each one of these athletes are making. You know, how we feel about it, how the coaches, the fans, the athletes, that's on us. But those guys they're grown-ups, and I think the UFC gives them opportunities. Even it's not like the UFC is forcing anybody to fight those fights as they get older. You hear Dana, he's always like, hey man, he's done. No, he's out. He's out. Nobody wants to see. Nobody was happy seeing Israel get knocked out, except for maybe Nasruddin's corner. Nobody, Nobody, yeah. It wasn't personal. It's not about Nasruddin. God bless the guy. Good for him. You know, he probably works so hard. Just nobody wants to see the legends go out like that. It's painful, you know? So it just is what it is, though.
That's how you build the new stars, though. You need to have those guys willing to take those fights if you're going to have the
But I'm just telling you, it's not that they're pressured to do it. Like, if you go to the UFC and say, hey, I want to retire, they'd be like, man, cool. You know, like, they're not, well, no, hey, do another one. Hey, come on, man, one more. They don't do that. So it's a little disingenuous when people are like, yeah, UFC, you know, like squeezing it out of them. No, they're making a decision. Yeah, definitely. Maybe they want to chase that check. But, you know, we all have decisions in life on what we want to do and when we want to do it. And so those guys are just in a really weird dilemma because they're really just like a hair off. You know, I mean, it's just maybe a quarter inch or a half inch or an inch. And it's like you're in the room. You feel great. I'm sure he had a good camp. He's probably whooping everybody just a little bit. So I just, you know, it's just the smallest percentage. And I think that's what we're seeing. And, you know, again, it's unfortunate. I think Izzy's still really, really good right now. I think he could do great, but that's, again, it's up to him.
Yeah. You roll the dice and, you know, you lose again, then you're staring at a 4-loss losing streak and, you know, people start questioning your past work and all that stuff.
I mean, yeah.
No further than BJ Penn and Tony Ferguson.
I know, Izzy
said at the media day coming in, like, God forbid I could lose 10 fights in a row and it doesn't change anything for me. I think there's a degree of truth in there. I think if it starts getting real bad, like,
I think
calling up 4 or 5, it's one thing. Once you get to 7 or 8.
But be fair, like, I don't think he would ever do that. He's way too intelligent of a guy. He's way too graceful. He's way too smart. But what I would say is, look at Chuck Liddell. I mean, he didn't go out good, but we still love Chuck. Like, certain guys, like, Tony never got to the undisputed title. So I think that he kind of – it sucks for him, you know, because of the window, the way it worked. But, you know, you win the undisputed belt, and you hold on to it. Like, Chuck, like Izzy – these guys are legends, man. It's so hard to keep the title and hold on to it, fight after fight, challenger after challenge, health, injury prevention, God forbid something else happens in your life with your family, or, you know, there's a litany of things that can happen to an athlete that can throw them off course, personal relationships, problems outside of the gym. Anyway, so you can go on and on. So these guys, when I see this happen towards the end, I just kind of try to celebrate what they've done and it is just part of the game.
Yeah. And I guess last thing on Israel and this fight before we move on, there was the sequence that ended it, right? Like, there was the eye poke and Israel waved it off, basically, you know, didn't take the time, which he said was a mistake because he felt like, you know, Nasruddin was gassing out. So that's why he wanted to keep going. But 10 seconds later, he gets caught with the shot, switching stances and knocked out. So what do you read into that? Is that just tactical errors? He's got to, like, of course, take the blame for all that, for not taking the time for the stance switch when he did.
Yeah, I mean, you know, maybe he was super relaxed. Maybe Nasruddin was like, I think I've got to go on this tempo change. Like, once we start going again, because I'm getting tired, so I need to shift gears. We don't know, you know. It's so hard to say. Well, if you would have done that, then that wouldn't happen. If you would have done that, he's the one that decided to wave him in, and that's it, you know. So again, it's really hard to go back and say, oh, I shouldn't have done that in a fight. It's so volatile and the timing. And, you know, as coaches, you're always telling the guy, hey, if he looks gassed, right, you know, if you can recover quick, go. So, you know, don't give him that break. So he was just kind of following protocol there, if that's what he saw, and maybe just got relaxed staying in the A zone on that step back. He didn't really get off the angle as much. Mm-hmm. But all it takes is just one mistake.
Yep. That's the game.
Yeah.
I guess while we're kind of on this topic of, you know, like, post-fight fallout and digesting that stuff, the co-main event where Michael Venom Page moved up to middleweight and beat Chara Bullitt. We're now hearing Chara say he was sick. That's the worst I've ever felt in a fight. Like, all these things. And MVP, I think, very classy kind of said.
That, so, like, classy.
Yeah. Like, he was great saying, don't make the excuses when you win or lose type of thing.
That guy is so classy. He's so well-spoken. He's really something. And if you play his game, him and Wonderboy are, like, so awesome at what they do. Like, you just got to give a guy credit. Like, if you want to play that game with him, and look at Ian Garry. Ian Garry was getting tagged on the feet from him. Yeah. He looked so out of it. Like, he could not get it. He was wrestling him. Mm-hmm. You know, he had to, because he was losing. He was getting hit a lot. And the other thing is, Ian Garry's got great timing. He's very good on the feet. He's very good at making adjustments. Ian Garry's got a pretty high fight IQ, And he was lost in there. I mean, lost. And that's what a guy like that will do. Michael Venom Page, Wonder Boy, these guys are master class at distance management. I mean, they will, if you allow them to close the distance and you try to stay there with them, you're probably just not going to win that fight. Buckley is a G and just went after Wonder Boy there and got it done. But he was getting hit too in the first. You can't, you cannot stay at distance with those guys. You cannot, you know, like Bilal Muhammad, no game. You just got to get in there and get right on them. I mean, you can't box them close in, striking with pressure. But, you know, I saw some comments he made about he was going to make him shoot for the takedown or something like that. And it's like, you know, I don't know what it was. I don't know what happened, but I don't need to say anything. I thought what Michael Venom Page said, he's so classy the way that he said, man, you know, like if you win, you can talk, but you know, I've had guys that fight and after they win, you know, I make a statement. Brandon, when he fought Figueiredo, he had a torn MCL and I made a statement. People were like, oh, and it's like, hey, we won the fight. And people were like, why are you saying that? It's like, we won. I'm just saying as his coach, he was injured and people got shitty about it. So it's like, man, you know, that's just not sports. Like you win or you lose with grace. It's one of those things. You just don't say it after the fact, or you can't, you just got to accept it. And I always tell my athletes, the minute you step in there, accept the result. Like nobody wants to hear about, hey, I was hurt and this and that. I'm sure MVP was hurt too, man. So.
Yep, exactly. If it's not bad, pull out of the fight, I guess. But I know it's not that easy for everyone, but nevertheless, safe. Before we move on to UFC 312, I know, you know, I see you for the video viewers here. You're wearing the Dallas Stars jersey. Tell me, what was life like landing back in Dallas over what's happened the past few days with Luka Doncic?
Don't even get me started, man. I mean, don't even get me started.
Give us a little rant.
New ownership, people who don't care about Dallas, they don't care about the city, they don't care, they want to bring casinos in here and do all kinds of crap. And you know, Mark Cuban really disappointed us, man. He really disappointed us. He sold out. He did, and he can say whatever he wants, but we love Luka. Is like, how do you trade Luka? That's like trading Jordan. I mean, he's probably the best player in the NBA. He's got so much star power. We went to the finals. He showed out. Like, he was amazing in the finals. I mean, he is amazing. Sure, maybe he's a little chubby. Maybe he likes to booze it up and eat a little bit in the summer. I don't know. But if you're scoring 38 points a game, I don't give a shit if you got a gut. Like, I couldn't do that. So, I don't know, man. It really seems like it's all about the money. And it's not like Anthony Davis isn't hurt all the time. Like, it doesn't make any sense at all. And I just think they don't care about our team. They don't live here. They're not Texans. They don't live in Dallas. Mm-hmm. They're not a part of our community. And this shows they're not a part of our community. And this shows they don't care at all about what we care about. And that's fine. You know, like for me, I always support all the local teams because they support us. These guys come to the gym and they're like, oh man, you know, we love you. We root for you. The Mavs, you know, with Darren and the relationship I had with them. I mean, those guys all supported us. They were always at the gym, training, coming in, all of them. Like, and just, we have a really cool, at the Rangers. I mean, Damon threw the first pitch out. Like, every single sports team here, Micah Parsons came to wrestling practice and was taking people down. I mean, he was. Yep. He came in. I was like, dude, you're not doing this. He's like, just let me in, coach. I go, if you tear your ACL, they're going to burn the gym down. You know, I was like, you can't, he's like, just let me go in. And he was pretty badass. So it's like, they're such a part of our community and we're the MMA team for Dallas, you know? So it really, really is disheartening, man. But you know, it always comes down to money and that's all people care about. But legacy, you're not taking any of it with you, man. You're not taking any of it with you, buddy. You can collect as many little green papers as you want, but when you die, guess what? They don't do anything for you. So it's just sad to me to see the Mavs kind of thrown into that situation. And even if they win and Luka was like Dirk, it was like a part of, it's even the Dallas's thing, like get a European and he's the guy, right? We had Dirk before that. So it's just weird. It's just weird.
It was weird. That happened late Saturday night here. Did you have to like wake up and see your phone and do like a double check? Did you have a bunch of text messages? What was kind of like your way of learning?
I saw it on Twitter and then I saw like fans putting like a casket on like going to American Airlines and putting a casket with Luka. And like, it's just, Luka is a part of Dallas, you know, like it's not just about him as a player. Like, you know, I mean, It's hard to explain, but you obviously understand. And every single person I've seen says this is the stupidest thing they've ever seen. I haven't seen one person. No, and no, and I mean, look, I'm not a basketball player, and I don't pretend to be. I always try to be careful talking about other sports. I love sports, but I talk about what I know and what I've done. So I don't know. Maybe there's some things that we don't know. I will say that, but on the face of it, looks like a pretty jackass move. I mean, it is what it,
I mean,
it's
I
not
think
like
I'm
that. It's
go
not
ahead.
like Anthony Davis is a guy that's consistent. That's the biggest thing. If they were to like, hey, we need a consistency. The guy's work ethic's not good. Okay. Well, he plays most more than Anthony Davis and scores more than Anthony Davis. So like, and he's younger than Anthony Davis. So rationalize that out for me. And
No,
yeah, we do need a big man presence, but it's like, I don't know, man. I don't know. You throw
it's.
me way off course here,
I
Mike. You're
know,
taking me
sorry,
to
it's
court.
utterly shocking. I just wanted, obviously, you being in Dallas, I wanted like the local reaction, but that's basically what I
It
expected. I
ain't.
mean, I think I've
Yeah, it ain't.
consumed all of the content, whether it's like reporters or players or everything out there, and I think it's a collective what the fuck from like everyone.
Yeah.
So
I mean,
it's
you got
pretty
guys
interesting to
like
see.
you got guys in the NBA. They're like, what the fuck are they doing? So, I mean, I think that.
They know more than we do, so I think that kind of says it. But yeah, no, I appreciate you sharing that thought from being on the ground there in Dallas. As we move into UFC 312 now, obviously the weekend headline by Sean Strickland and Dricus du Plessis, the rematch. I think you did your UFC breakdown for their first fight, so you probably like looked pretty closely at both of these guys. I guess off the top, if someone who didn't know MMA very well came to you and said, "Describe both of these guys' styles to me," what would you say to them?
Poor Dricus, like this guy's gonna win like 10 fights in a row, 10 title offenses. People are maybe they'll finally give him
I
a
can't pick
break.
him against him anymore. I said after the last fight, I'm not picking against him until he loses, but
Here's
he's
the
just gonna be
thing.
my default winner now.
But here's the thing, like Sean Strickland is not a fucking game, right? And Sean Strickland is a guy that I think he builds confidence with experience, and he has experience in there with Dricus going at Dricus. So people are kind of counting him out a little bit more in this fight, saying, well, Dricus is going to finish. Dricus is getting better and better. That might be the case, but I still see this as a very close fight. I just think with the experience that Sean Strickland has, mentally, I feel like he'll be more prepared. But again, a champion is 30% better every time, right? You become the champion, you're literally 30% better. The confidence that comes with that. And Dricus is a fucking beast. That guy just. He knows it doesn't look great, but he don't care. His whole thing is, I'm gonna outwill you. And that's powerful, man. Fighting is about will, and he outwills people. He really, really does. So, but that ain't gonna be easy to do against Sean Strickland, because Sean Strickland is a 5-round fighter. So really, that's a great fight. And I'm glad they're doing that fight. Yeah, Khamzat can come right after that. That's fine. But this fight makes sense.
Yeah, I guess like for Sean, he's got a pretty straightforward style. We know what he likes to do, and it could be effective, but that leads to a lot of these close fights. I think he's had 8 split decisions in the UFC, won
Yeah.
6 and lost 2. So like what, I
That ain't
guess.
bad though. That's not
No, it
bad.
is good, but it's like a coin toss to a degree when you get to those judges. You don't know what can he do, I guess, to create more separation on the scorecards and those things.
I think that his one of his best skills is his pacing and his ability to just kind of be like water, right? Just kind of keep flowing forward, right? But I mean, you don't do that by throwing power shots and crazy combinations. So that there lies in the problem. But we've seen him when he hurts guys, what? He goes after him. So I think that he's going to try to hurt Dricus. I think he wants to hurt Dricus. I think he doesn't like Dricus. And I think Dricus doesn't like him. And I think that we're going to see quite a battle. But as far as him changing his style, he can wrestle. He's a black belt in jiu-jitsu. I think we're going to see pretty much what we saw, but a more aggressive version of that. And I think that they'll probably add on a little bit. They'll study the tape and they'll come up with some more stuff as well. But Dricus's coach is really, really good at game planning too. So it's going to be a real chess match between these two. And it's going to be violent. And you just know they don't like each other. So it's just one of those fights where it's like, yeah, I want to see that fight, I think it's going to be a pretty interesting fight.
Yeah, if Sean was one of your guys and they came to you and was like, Alex Pereira has offered to be in the corner with you, what would you say to that as a guy where there's like a language barrier and stuff? Would you see value in, having him there, especially it seems like he wants to be as well?
My rule for fight week is you can bring who you want in the corner. I mean, the guys, they're like, Coach, I just need you, really. Like, we are together all the time. going through the rounds together, the voice, I mean, you know, and they need Charles sometimes as well, Charles Bird for striking, or they might need a wrestling coach too. But if they want to bring a third, like their dad or their brother, or I always say yes, like this is their dream, dude. Like this is their dream. Now, my new thing is I let them do weigh-ins. So like Diego had his son, I said, take him across the stage. Yeah. Like, I don't even need to go to weigh-ins. Like I've done it a million times. What, you know, like let them experience that and bring everybody along with it. And I mean, Sean knows what he's doing, you know, and his team, they know what they're doing. They've been doing this a long time. They've been there before. So I think that, yeah, I don't think it's a big deal. I mean, and it is, and I mean, he's a G too. I mean, it's Alex Pereira. So, I mean, there's a little flex there. I mean, yeah. You're walking in with him, you know, maybe he's going to chama the energy on Drickus a little bit. Who knows? I don't know. I don't think it's a big deal at all. I mean, I think it's cool.
Yeah, it is. Definitely. I'm sure. Yeah. Like Drickus and him have got a little steam building after the last fight too. So maybe, yeah, like you said, Drickus staring across, there could be something there. And I guess sticking on Drickus, I think you said a kind of a great point there. His confidence and his style is building over the results. And he said that a lot through these interviews. Like Sean Strickland's one of those guys, you can watch all the tape, but it's different when you get in there. But now that I have five rounds, there's going to be no feeling out process. So do you think him to just like, is he going to come out like hell on wheels from the opening?
I think those guys in South Africa fucking study fucking film. I mean, I think that his coach, like I've met him before. He's an intense guy. You know, people said about me and I met him. I was like, we had a conversation and it was, I'm not going to share it with anybody, share the details, but I was with Uriah and a couple other guys and we were like, he's an intense dude. And then I saw the cattle prod shit and I had never seen that. And I would never do that. I don't really like that, but Drickus seems to like it. And so who cares? Like people are always judging, but like if your fighter's like, hell yeah, that makes me focus, whatever. They have their own, those guys came up together, but I think that they really, really game plan hard. And I think they're going to have a couple tricks up their sleeve to try to catch Strickland. And but again, I think Strickland's team knows that too. So we'll see, but the confidence that Drickus has right now, it matters. It's not something that you can say, oh yeah, whatever, it's the same fight. No, it matters. But I think again that Sean also has confidence because he thinks he won that fight, right? So I think that is kind of a push. Even though Drickus is the champion, I think Strickland has a lot of confidence going into the fight.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting. It seems like you said, kind of the diversity of Duplessis seems to be a big deal here as well. Like I know in the first fight, some of those takedowns he got were like really key in terms of like the 100%. Timing and the impact, but he didn't 100%. Really do a whole lot with them in terms of like, you know, ground and pounder submissions. But it seems like he can just go to that. And you have Sean out here saying, you know, like, let's make it a stand up pack type of thing. He's kind of backtracked on that saying, like, I know it's MMA, but it just kind of shows where his mind is at. And I think Drickus is at least more willing to mix it up.
Drickus is really good at timing those doubles, right? Getting guys to come forward, and then he because Drickus, well, he's good at tempo changing. It doesn't look the best, but he'll tempo change where he'll attack, 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 and then he'll circle, attack, 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 circle, and then when they follow, he'll double, right? So he'll draw them in, he'll pull them in, and he's smart. He's got a very high fight IQ, and so I think he's going to be looking to take Strickland down and get more ground time and more ground control, and also maybe a little bit more control against the fence. But here's the problem. Strickland's good at that. He's good against the fence. He's good in the clinch, and he's very hard to hold down. Very hard to hold down. So, but maybe if Drickus could get to the back a little bit, right? If he could just get a couple key positions, it could really change the fight. So definitely a good point.
Yeah. Sean Strickland never being submitted in MMA, I don't think either. So
I mean, If he gets choked, it would be, he's hurt, he's rocked, almost similar to Izzy, kind of like, he's just kind of, he's got really good defense. He's really well balanced, man. So there's no easy path to victory. Drickus just has to do everything better. Yeah. You know?
And from all signs on this, the winner will be facing Khamzat Chimaev, who I know many people wanted in the spot regardless, but it seems like he's going to get the winner of this. Who do you think is the more difficult fight for Khamzat coming out of this?
I mean, whatever happened in Vegas with their training, those guys know. And it seems that something happened. I don't know. And I'm not going to get into it because it's not my team, not my thing. I don't know.
Sure.
I'm not going to speculate about people's training.
Yeah, worth noting that they have, and I think Sean has said on interviews that Hamzat submitted him a few times.
Okay, so we go back to what we were just, you know, speaking about confidence and understanding strengths and a feel. Hey, I got to feel this guy. I mean, if Hamzat squeezed him and he felt like he can do it, we saw him when he went after Robert Whittaker. I mean, when he's dialed in and he's got that weight cut right and he can get going, you know, like, and he can kind of start shifting gears, man, he's going to be trouble, you know, and because Usman is so unbelievably awesome. We saw him do the same exact thing to Usman. He just couldn't submit him. He did the exact same thing to Usman in the first round. And Usman is all-time great, one of the best, especially on the – no one has done that to Usman. No. Nobody. So you just got to – Hamzat is very good at what he does. And Drickus ain't going to be easy to hold down, right? But Drickus has got maybe some different holes in other areas, you know. I don't know. I think Sean could do well against Hamzat on the feet. And, you know, kind of keep the spacing and kind of stay busy. And maybe if you can get him in the later rounds, I mean, that would be really good for him. Whereas then if Drickus and Hamzat, we've seen Drickus get tired before. We can't act like that maybe isn't possible again if they had a lot of huge wrestling exchanges early where he was trying to take Drickus down and Drickus was defending. Because every single fight of Drickus is the one who's trying to wrestle. Nobody's trying to wrestle him. So we haven't seen that yet. We don't know what that will look like. But Drickus, I wouldn't. That's a really hell of a fight. If it's Drickus, either one, Drickus versus Hamzat or Strickland, both of those are just as interesting. So the future for middleweight for this title fight and the next is good. It's just what happens to these guys, Izzy, Robert, all those guys have been there for so long. How does this mix of, you know, the guys like Roman and Fluffy and them, how are they going to mix into here? Are they capable of being world champions? What is the ceiling on those guys? And I'm sure Mick Maynard is going to, these guys know MMA, man. Mick and Sean know their shit. Bottom line, people need to realize, because these guys don't ever talk, they don't do interviews, no one even knows who they are.
Yeah.
Think about how many badass fights you've watched in your life. Like on the undercard, you're like, damn, these little guys, they're fucking whipping each other's ass. You're like, these two dudes, I mean, they know MMA. And as much as I know MMA, every once in a while, I'm like, man, I didn't see that one. Like, those guys impress me, man. They really, really do. And they don't talk. Nobody knows them, and they don't care, you know. And I think that Mick is going to plan out, obviously, you know. Mick is big about, if you look at these divisions now, he's big about what? Turning things over, right? Like, next guy, next guy, next guy. The UFC is growing fast. And even us, even fans and coaches and guys that are in it, we're not even comfortable with it, right? We're like, no, man, that's my guy. No, Izzy, this. But those guys are running a business, man. And if once something isn't where it needs to be, what? You replace it, right? I mean, that's just the nature of the business. It just hurts a little bit sometimes.
Yeah, it does. I think Mick's done a great job building up this 185 division. We haven't mentioned Caio Baralho, who's, I think, 7-0 in the UFC. He's doing great things. So, yeah, this is like Caio, the next wave. And, yeah, I think
Caio, Roman, like, yeah, for sure. You know, and again, I don't know if, you know, you can't discredit, like, oh, yeah, Robert Ward. They still got to get past Robert Whittaker.
Yep.
You know, and Robert Whittaker, you know, when he's on point, he is, I think, one of the most well-rounded fighters in the UFC. Yep. So, you know, you got to watch the speculation, but, you know, our job is to analyze. We're trying to analyze the future of the middleweight division. So it's all with great respect.
Yeah, of course. This is just the nature of the beast. I mean, there was years there where Izzy was holding the belt and Robert, you know, you couldn't even match up a guy you were hoping to have fight for the belt against Robert, because they all lost. And then you're like,
for 2 or 3 years. Like, think about that. Yeah, think about being on the very, even Robert, you know, poor guy, you know, I mean, you know, just being second, but being that good for that long. So super, you know, it's super sad sometimes to see these guys not get everything they want, you know, with a story. You like to see the story build and then crest at the top, right? And then there's just like Hollywood, there's the happy ending and then the story's over. But life doesn't operate that way, unfortunately, Mike. And, you know, so I just think it's a transition period. There will be these transition periods in MMA, like there were with Chuck and all those guys, and then with GSP, you know, and those guys. And now there's this transition period now with Izzy and those guys. And I still think that there's just so much to be celebrated. And what I would like is to see these guys get kind of, you know, a couple of one or two like good fights that match up well, or like legend versus legend type fights. you know, I think would be cool.
Yeah, it would be nice for sure. As you broke it down great there, this is just the natural progression of the sport. And, you know, I appreciate, you know, one more shout out to Mick Maynard for actually getting these guys to sign up for these matchups. Yeah, and you see how it goes. I mean, lightweight, people criticize that weight class for a while of those highest ranked guys not taking him on. But then you had like that phase where Justin Gaethje fought Fazeev and Poirier fought Benoit Saint-Denis. But the, both those up-and-coming guys lost. And that's sometimes what happens. They fended it off a little bit longer. But here we saw Izzy lose in that spot. So
and it's gonna get results
on both sides.
And, you know, Mick's the one that built Izzy up. Mm-hmm. I remember when he told me, I got to sign this guy, you got to sign you. And I was like, oh, yeah. He goes, yeah. He's like, he can be the champion. I was like, oh, yeah. I remember that. I remember when he was talking about it. So it's like, you know, and Sean with Connor, like people forget that these are the guys that found these guys. These are the guys that found these stars and cultivated them. So as much as it hurts us, what probably hurts them even more.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I've never talked to either of them about it, but I'm sure they don't like it either. But again, it's just the nature of the beast, man. It's just what this job is and what it entails. And, you know, everyone feels it. Coaches feel it. Athletes feel it. Teammates feel it. Fans feel it. And we all feel the same way. And it's kind of sweet, you know, that everybody collectively, you know, because this can be a really shit space, right? Yeah, the MMA space. But like in this topic, everybody's so united. They're like, nah, man, we don't want to see that, you know, which I agree with.
Yep, it's the way it goes, though. Okay, since we're talking about kind of bringing things full circle and stories and the ups and downs and stuff, I'll just close it on this. Tatiana Suarez, I think, is someone that people have said, you know, from the beginning, she was going to be anointed UFC champion. I think it's been a lot slower than many people believe, coming off the Ultimate Fighter because of injuries and layoffs and all that type of stuff. But here she is. Sure. She will challenge Zhang Wali in the co-main event of UFC 312. I think some people think this is maybe her hardest test for Zhang Wali. Some people think it's a coronation for Tatiana. What's kind of your read on this fight? Is Tatiana going to be ready for this after, I guess, all the challenges she's experienced?
Tatiana, I don't know if you've seen her documentary.
Unbelievable story.
I watch it. I was on the plane and I saw it and I was like, and I know her and I've known her for a while. She's a very sweet girl. She's so polite. Every time I see her and Patchy, shout out to both of them. Really classy, both of them. And, two super tough people together. I mean, imagine someone picks on those two. I mean, you want to talk about the wrong people to mess with. Cause he told me, he said that Tatiana, when he rolls with her, I asked him, I was like, Patchy, tell me, I said, like, can she, he's like, dude, she's so strong. She's so tough. He's like, I got to work. And he's one of the best guys in his weight class in the world.
Yeah.
So I think Tatiana is just a tiger, you know, like you could just see it in her. I mean, she is, you know, watching that documentary, the intensity of her to become a champion is like real. But that's a tough test on the other side too. So this is really an interesting fight. Really shows where women's MMA is too, especially in the lighter weights, I think. Yeah. Strawweight, I mean, there are some, that weight class, like, it's, look at all those girls. They're so tough. The top 10 in that weight class is really something else. And not all the girls' classes are that way, I understand, but you got to celebrate. And this is a good title fight. I mean, do you want to see this fight?
This is the best they can do, I think, right now at the division. Yeah. And I'm glad they, you know, sucks for Verna Jandiroba. They took this fight away from her with Tatiana. But, you know, like, this is the one you had to make. And you have a window here where Tatiana's healthy and continually go. It's just, you hope if she does win that belt, she can defended, you know, frequently and things like that.
But it's just like,
for this now, is, we'll these, take appreciation of finally being these, here.
These are high level athletes. Yeah. And I think that, you know, girls MMA gets shit on a lot, man. And I get it. You know, some of the fights aren't great and everybody's doing their best, man. We all understand. But like these girls, these girls, these two girls right here, I mean, they could take out a little small thug gang, right? You know, like, look at these little girls and just boop, 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 boop. Yeah. They're really special. They're really talented athletes. Consistently been great. So yeah, I mean, I think two really, really good title fights. And again, man, you know, it's just not easy to get to that level, to maintain that level. So nothing but respect. And I'm hoping that these are really, really entertaining fights for the fans and for the teams and for the coaches. And hopefully that they end well, you know, hopefully there's nothing weird, no injuries, nothing funny.
Yeah, for sure. Because these two title fights need to have clean results, because the rest of UFC 312, admittedly, kind of falls off a cliff. Only four ranked fighters on this card, and they're all in the title bouts. But I think we talked about those and we broke them down well, Saif. Yeah. Appreciate you coming on, man. This has been a lot of fun. I know you got a lot of stuff coming up in the next few months with your guys from Fortis. Yeah. You make the push to 100 team wins.
100 wins.
It's looking great, man. So
98. Yeah. I'm on 98. So
there you go. And what's the next one?
Macy's fighting in Seattle. Then we've got Morono, we've got Sammy, we got Span coming up, we got Alonzo in London. We're gonna have some back-to-backs coming up, but
yeah,
you know, I'm just enjoying the, like I told you when we talked, I'm just kind of enjoying the present, man. I'm trying to stay very present-minded and just really appreciative and have so much gratitude for the ride, you know, to be still 20 years doing this. It's like, it's just been an unbelievable experience, just incredible. And you know, I guess I'm just getting old, man, because I just want to see everybody like do well. And I want to see everybody, like, I want to see everything happen well for everybody. And I think that, I think the sport's just going to continue to take off. And I think that, you know, I can't tell you how many young people are coming in our gym. We have this kid right now. Shout out to him. I'm just going to say his first name, because I don't want to get cocky. His name is Luis. Okay. I'm not going to say his last name. He's 16 years old. He shows up like 3 months ago from California. He's like 6'3", right? He's like, yes, sir. I've been training a little bit, right? I said, all right, go spar the, you know, go spar this kid. We got a kid, a real tough kid, Charles Woods. He's like 2-0. Starts moving with a guy, and I'm like, I mean, this guy looks like he's ready to go to the contenders, like not tomorrow.
Wow.
And I'm like, stop. And I'm like, come here. So I start talking, like, well, how's your jiu-jitsu? Well, yeah, I've been training jiu-jitsu since I was 5, and I'm homeschooled. He said, my parents, like, really support me doing this. And I met his parents. Like, we want him to go to the UFC. That's what we want.
Wow.
And it's like, the sport is we've been in it so long that you don't realize how it's literally affecting the whole societal outlook on these young people. They don't want to play football. They don't want to play basketball. They sure as hell don't want to play baseball. They want to fight, you know, and they're not thinking about the money, which is definitely not like those other three.
Yeah.
But what I'm saying is, it's becoming a mainstream thing as far as, hey, kids don't go to karate class anymore. They go to jiu-jitsu, right? Instead of going to do CrossFit, people now do Muay Thai. You know what I mean? Things are changing now, and MMA is becoming so mainstream. So many people train. So many people understand it. So many people watch it. And it's just something that we all have to celebrate and really be happy about in 2025, how far the sport has come in 25 years. I mean, really 22, 23 years since 2003 is unbelievable. And where will the sport be in 20 more years?
Yep. I mean, I remember Rory McDonald making his UFC debut, and everyone was like, this is the new era. This is the guy who's just been training MMA since he was young. And I think he made his debut about 14 years ago at this point.
Yeah.
So just think about all the people who have come up after that. But yeah, I appreciate your insight and your analytical mind on this, Saif. I know it's been a long journey home, so I hope you can get some rest now. Maybe wear your Luka Doncic jersey to bed. I don't know what you want to do, but whatever you need to do to get over the emotions.
I don't ever put other people's names on my back. That's not my thing, but I'll tell you though, that doesn't matter. That's just the stupidest trade in the history of trades. I mean, there's nothing to say. That hopefully Luka goes there with LeBron, and hell, half of Dallas might start rooting for the Lakers now.
I know, it's gonna be one of those weird ones.
Yeah, it's because I mean, you know, it's just the weird.
I think the Lakers are in Dallas on February 25th, so we're gonna get
everybody's gonna go with all their Luka stuff on and start booing the Dallas the whole time and rooting for the Lakers. I don't know, man. It's just the weirdest thing ever. And again, like I'm not the GM, but that one just.
I know, madness. All right, Saif, get some rest, man. Appreciate your time, and we will have you back here soon. Go take a quick break, and we'll wrap things up.
Later, bro.
For another episode of the Bonfire Podcast, thanks so much once again to Saif Saud for joining the show and giving his knowledge and insight pretty much fresh off the plane from Saudi Arabia there. Unfortunately, a fruitless trip for him over there, but this is the game and what happens sometimes. But appreciate him making the time to hop on here and give his thoughts in between events here. Big time stuff going to happen at UFC 312, as we discussed there. Two title fights. I know, you know, we've said many times the card isn't great outside of that, but I do think these championship fights massively significant, of course, for their respective weight classes. So we'll let you all enjoy that for the week. Plenty of coverage coming on MMA Junkie from UFC 312, and appreciate everyone tuning into the podcast this week. Hope you all enjoy the fights, enjoy the week, and we'll see you right back here next week by the Bonfire.